From NPR News, it's All Things Considered. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Robert Siegel. On Capitol Hill today, the House voted overwhelmingly to approve the Clean Diamonds Act. The Senate is expected to take up a companion measure soon. The bill would require all rough or uncut diamonds coming into the U.S. to carry certificates of origin. The idea is to stop the import of so-called blood diamonds that finance civil wars in Africa.
One major source of these gems is the West African nation of Sierra Leone. A decade-long civil war there has killed some 75,000 people. Thousands more have been maimed and crippled by rebels of the Revolutionary United Front. Earlier this year, the warring sides began to negotiate peace, but the rebels refused to give up control of their most valuable weapon, the country's diamond mines. NPR's Deborah George has part two of our series from American Radio Works on the international diamond trade.
On a hot and humid afternoon, a canoe dug out of a tree trunk floats in the Siwa River. A rusty generator hums on the bank, and unseen, just below the surface, a man stands on the river bottom, scraping gravel into a bucket.
The machine right now with the beat.
The machine that is beating.
That really get right now air.
Gives him air to breathe.
Sensei Kondo explains that the man beneath the river is a diamond miner like himself.
He breathes like a car, he breathes right now.
He breathes just the way I'm breathing, where I'm sitting down, under the river.
Under the river.
The man scrapes the river gravel into a bucket attached to a rope.
If you want to pull gravel.
If he wants to take gravel out of the river.
He can draw that rope.
He draws the rope.
Sierra Leone has thousands of miners like these men who scrape a living out of the ground. Their diamonds may end up as legal exports, netting the government a small percentage. Diamonds are small, though, and Sierra Leone's borders have always been porous. Smuggling is nothing new here, but the civil war has accelerated it. Illicit diamonds smuggled out by the rebels are said to be worth $250 to $300 million a year, money that's brought war and mayhem instead of development. The roads in Sierra Leone tell the story. This is the best paved stretch of road in the whole country. It's the beginning of the diamond chain, and it runs between the towns of Bow and Kenema in the heart of the country's eastern diamond fields. On Fridays and Saturdays, miners crowd into both towns to pick up supplies and negotiate with the dealers, who are the next link in the diamond chain.
How much?
Huh?
How much?
This is 155. No.
Diamond dealer Rodney Michaels is Lebanese, like most of Sierra Leone's merchant class. In his backroom office, there's an ancient air conditioner held together with duct tape and a fluorescent light pulled down low over a wooden table. This afternoon, three men bring in a diamond wrapped in a piece of paper. They put it on the table. Rodney takes out his glass.
4.8 for me.
The stone is a large one, 3.7 carats. Rodney offers $4,800. It may seem like a lot, but at this stage of the diamond chain, a dozen or so people may take a cut. Even the tribal chief of the region. At first, the men seem angry.
I don't like you.
One of them has tears in his eyes, but finally they shrug their shoulders and laugh and accept the offer. But the deal isn't done. Rodney says he won't buy the diamond unless they get a mining license. So they go, probably to find a miner with a license who will go in with them. For a cut, of course. These men could be rebels, but according to Rodney, RUF fighters are lying low these days.
It's a very, very delicate situation, and you have to be careful what you say. There was a time when the peace pact was signed. Yes, rebels were allowed to come in and sell. Now you cannot buy diamonds from people if they don't have mining licenses. The rebels are not coming to Bo, to Kenema, to Freetown and selling their diamonds. And even if they are, it will be probably the smallest goods. All the big diamonds are taken to Liberia, and from there what happens, God alone knows.
Liberia is just across the border, and according to UN reports, it's been the main conduit for the rebel diamonds. It's easy to figure out, experts say. Liberian mines produce very few diamonds, but in recent years, the country has exported up to 6 million carats a year. Political instability and war in both countries and the surrounding region makes this an ideal staging area for smuggling. Some of the most intriguing information about how the rebels get their diamonds out of the country comes from Sierra Leone's children. This is a camp near the town of Bo for children who've escaped from the rebels or been released. The RUF kidnapped thousands of children during the war. They turned them into soldiers, used them for sex, and made them slave in the diamond mines of the Kono district, about 50 miles north of here, where the biggest and most valuable stones are found. The rebels have held this area since 1997.
My name is Jenna. Jenna Sandy. And 18 years.
Jenna Sandy was abducted as a child and spent years with the rebels. She finally escaped and made her way back home. She says besides their own diamond mining, the rebels would sweep down on subsistence miners and rob them. And she says she often saw visitors who arrived in small planes to do business with the rebels.
I went with my helicopter plane, then they got the diamond, then he left the ammunition then.
Some white people used to visit them because the rebels take the diamond, say they are giving it to Pape. Pape is the rebel leader for the Sankor. So when they gather these diamonds, white people come with Pape, and in exchange they bring food items for them and ammunition.
The rebel leader, Fode Sanko, who was notorious for his brutality, was captured last year. He sits in prison in the capital, Freetown, and the government is trying to staunch the flow of blood diamonds with computers and sealing wax. Every diamond that leaves the country is supposed to come through this place. The government gold and diamond office in Freetown is just behind the Bank of Sierra Leone, in two cramped rooms with a few odds and ends of furniture. Exporters come here with diamonds they've bought from dealers. Two men evaluate them. The director of the office, Lawrence Ndoga Meyer, and an Israeli dealer, Lempel Michel, who represents the Diamond High Council in Antwerp. Both men say they can spot possible rebel diamonds just by looking.
There are certain areas where you can identify from where it comes by the quality.
Like you have in Tongo Field, where there's a rebel-held area, the diamonds are crinkly, they are cleavage-looking, and from Kono, they are smooth, good-looking, good shapes, you know, very nice colors. That's why they always fetch a premium when they go outside in the open market.
Once the diamond is examined, it's weighed, photographed, packaged in clear plastic, sealed, and assigned a random number to foil would-be counterfeiters.
It can only be opened or sealed by the importing country. If they see any other than that, then they'll know maybe this has been already tampered with.
The information is sent by computer to Antwerp. But what happens before a diamond gets to this office in Freetown is anybody's guess. There are weak links all along the diamond chain. Out in the bush, the mines inspectors say if they get a tip-off about illegal diamonds, they have to get on their bicycles or take public transportation. By the time they get to the spot, the men with the diamonds are long gone. In July, the rebels signed an accord with the government. As part of a peace deal, they promised to stop mining and give up control of the Kono area. But Ian Smiley, a Canadian who served on the UN panel investigating conflict diamonds in West Africa, says in the past, the RUF has used ceasefires to prepare for more war. His group has visited rebel-held areas recently. He says the diamond digging there is going on at a faster pace than ever.
Since there is a peace agreement, the RUF aren't being harassed by anybody. In fact, UNAMSIL, the UN peacekeepers, are patrolling the area to make sure that there's no fighting. They don't have any mandate to stop diamond mining, so in effect, basically what we've done is we've given the RUF the time, the space, the ability to dig in a way that they couldn't over the last 5 years.
And he says blood diamonds are moving easily across the border in all directions.
You can take them to Guinea, you can take them to Liberia, you can take them to Monrovia. You could take them straight to Antwerp if there was a plane going that way.
At Freetown's airport, passengers coming in from the diamond fields line up and one by one are led into a room for a pat-down. It's not a very serious attempt. Leaving the country, there's even less security. A passenger without the required police clearance gets a polite request for a bribe. Any of these people could be hiding diamonds in their shoes or watch bands. And this is how a handful of tiny rough stones begins a chain of greed, hope, and desire that will extend around the world. I'm Deborah George for NPR News and American Radio Works.
American Radio Works is the documentary project of Minnesota Public Radio and NPR News. Tomorrow is the final part of our series, a visit to Antwerp, a city that's been called a smuggler's dream.